Today on Rambling About Cars, the season one champion of Getaway Driver is here with us in the house. He's going to talk about behind the scenes what it was like to do the show, what it was like to beat up everybody with a Ford Taurus. And also, by the way, he has another Ford Taurus that goes 8 seconds in the quarter mile. This guy is amazing. We're happy to have him here. We also are going to talk about Toyota Tundra because, let's be honest, Toyota doesn't come out with a new truck all the time. And
2007 this one, was the last time
for this one has some issues. So without further ado, it's podcast time.
It is.
But for this episode, it's also showtime. I'm Christopher Smith.
No, pun intended.
Across the way is Chris Bruce. Bruce, can you tell us just who this person is with us today?
Yeah, we have got Zach Wright, better known at least on YouTube and Instagram as Blue Turd, and he will explain why in just a minute.
Yes.
And he is essentially the champion of season one of Getaway Driver on Discovery. And I'll actually, you know what, I'll just throw it to him. Tell us about a little bit about Getaway Driver and tell us about the Blue Turd and the Red Turd. So go for it, Zach.
All right. Well, to fire this off, Getaway Driver is a brand new show on Discovery Channel, and this is hosted by no other than Michelle Rodriguez from Fast and the Furious.
Letty, when Letty's giving you the directions, you best listen, right?
Oh yeah, you better listen. So the whole concept of this show is that they found 24 of the best drivers, whether you be a drifter, a drag racer, a rally cross driver, you name it. They tried to hit every end of the motorsports, you know, spectrum, right? And instead of you racing in an environment where you're comfortable, you know, so like if you're a drag racer, you're not drag racing. If you're a drifter, you're not drifting. You know, they decided to take you out of your environment, and they're going to throw you into a what they call a compound. And in this compound, there's people chasing you. And the whole objective of the show is they throw you into this place blind, and you have to find an exit without trying to get your car totaled, hit, pit maneuvered, damaged in any kind of way. And you, I mean, if you could imagine, I mean, I like to say it all the time, like drivers, you know, if you talk about race car drivers, everybody's always at the top of their game in their happy place. You know, you put a drag racer behind a tree and he's going to go 0-12 on the light and ain't nobody going to touch him. But take that drag racer or take that rally car driver and throw him in an environment that he's never been in, doing something he's never done, and see how well they handle the pressure. And it was a great TV show with a lot of good personalities on it. And I think it was very entertaining, despite being kind of biased, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what really got me. What was the variety? Oh, actually, you know what? Before we go any further, I need to tell people to like and follow Motor One Podcast. We got to keep our overlord Clint happy. So, and you know what? You should be liking and following at this point anyways. We've been around for a while. We mostly know what we're talking about. Sometimes
come on, Smith. Let's get back to Zach. I want to hear show talk.
But yeah. So, I mean, I'll be honest. It's like, okay, I'm watching this because you're on there, because I'm a huge show guy. I've had a dozen shows over the years. I've done drag racing in them. I never went 8 seconds. That's we'll get to that later. No. Yeah. So I mean, there's a lot of show love here at Motor One, and I was like, well, I gotta check this out. But you see the reality car shows, and it's just kind of like, you know, it's kind of set up or stage or whatever.
Yeah.
I dug this because, like you said, I mean, everybody's kind of on equal footing here, and by equal footing, it looked like there was no footing. I mean, it's just like this. It's an apocalyptic compound, right?
There is no solid ground on this TV show. Everybody comes in here at what they think they are at the top of their game. They brought, I mean, think about this. You're going into a compound and you're trying to outrun whether or not it be 2 or 3 pursuers, depending on where you're at in the show. And you're in a 1,000 horsepower, 2JZ, 240SX, you know, like this thing should laugh at anything trying to chase it. But the show proves and undeniably really shows that if you put pressure on something, pressure breaks pipes. And it's how cool can you keep yourself doing something that you've never done.
Well, the first episode you were on had the extra thing of adding rain into the factor. So it was you and a Torah show versus there was a guy with a Chevy pickup, or maybe it was a Dodge pickup rat rod. And then a woman in a 240 SX or Sylvia drift car.
Yep. So she is actually arguably, and maybe even has the title of best female drifter in the world. She is very well known in Japan, actually. She has like oil commercials that play in Japan. Yeah, crazy. Blew my mind too. I was like, you're kidding me. And she showed me like the like advertisements and stuff. It was cool. But, you know, talk about the variety. So on my first episode, we enter this compound and you have this muscle truck that's got zoomies out the fender. You know, that makes 600-700 horsepower. And then on the opposite end, you have a female drifter who is the best female drifter in the world. And then lo and behold, here comes a four-door front-wheel drive Ford Taurus, and they're all looking at it like,
was that staged up on purpose, or were they legit like seriously a Taurus? Because I mean that's what the one guy said. I was like,
yes, no, this is I will be 100% with everybody because this is now my second time doing TV stuff. This show is 100%. Raw. Now they do, you know, just with anything, they do edit it because you do have to fit, you know, so much content into an X amount of time.
Right.
So everybody gets their correct amount of, you know, TV time per se, or they could tell the right story. And it does get, words do get twisted in, you know, in some ways sometimes, but as far as them saying, hey, when Zach pulls in, I need you to say this. No, that shit does not happen. Yeah, nice. there is definitely no scripting to this at all. That was 100% real, and it was hilarious to watch them say that when I came in.
Now, Zach, I'm going to interrupt you super quick. Okay, I just want to say, for anyone watching the YouTube version rather than the audio version, on YouTube we are seeing the three cars Zach was up against during his first episode. So you see S14 on top, Rat Rod pickup, and then his show, which this one here, it still has the hood on it. When you arrived on the show, there was no hood, but
there was no hood.
Yep. Yeah.
So, and rightfully so.
Well, right. I did this for a couple of reasons. You know, I have a YouTube channel as well. You guys can find me in Blue Turd on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And there's a cool story behind this red car that I bought. I bought it earlier that year. I honestly paid $3,500 for it. The car is the first automatic SHO to have a manual swap done to the body, which is cool. Wow. So it's got some history.
Huh.
It was the very first one ever done.
I think I know that car from way back in the day. Oh my God, I'm so old.
Yeah. Hamal Terry, who owned
yeah, yep. Okay.
Yeah.
I know that name.
Yep. So, but anyway, when the show came around, you know, everybody knew that there was going to be a chance that your car was going to be totaled.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knew going in, this is full contact. If you screw up and there is somebody there to ruin your car, they will ruin your car.
Let me ask a quick. Does get hit hard.
Let me ask a quick question right there, though. I mean, were there any guidelines about holding back a little bit? I mean, was it kind of understood? Yeah, we'll hit the car, but we're not going to, like, you know, 60 miles an hour into the driver's side kind of thing.
So, there was only two rules about that. So there was no intentional contact with the driver's door and no head-on collisions.
Okay.
So if, per se, like you will see sometimes in the show where somebody is trying to run away from the pursuer and they are driving straight into the pursuer, and it could be very easy that the pursuer, say, block off his path of travel. But that is, I mean, you're jumping out in front of somebody to basically have them head on collision you.
Mm-hmm.
That was against the rules.
Okay.
But other than that, it still happened. Everybody knew that there was rules. If it did happen, that wasn't to say that, oh, all of a sudden you win because they hit you the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knew that there was not to be intentional contact. But watching the show, you will find out that many cars had that contact. And
it's kind of hard to avoid at that point.
Well, so, you know, for our viewers who are watching, like, if you haven't seen the show, if you can imagine a compound that is literally a rundown water treatment plant / chemical biohazard facility. I mean, there is like there is a mixed surfaces. So you have concrete, you have gravel, you have dirt, you have mud, you have stuff to hit everywhere. I'm talking dump trucks to water tanks to crap laying around all on the roads, and everything is overgrown. So there's constantly stuff messing with your visibility. So if somebody was to shoot down an alleyway at 30 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden the pursuer's like, yeah, I'm going to cut him off right here, and then goes to cut him off, and then bow, you know, that happened multiple times.
So I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. Did you guys get to like walk around the course and stuff beforehand? But from looking at the episode, all of you guys look really lost when you went out there the first time.
You are completely blind going in.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that this is what I'm talking about. Everyone's on an even playing field. Because, I mean, you're literally going into a place blind, and all you know is that there – so in the first round, there's a day run. In the day run, you have two people chasing you, and there's two exits on this compound, and you have to go through an exit without being wrecked. So you get thrown into this compound, and you're searching for two exits. You know what the exit is supposed to look like, but you don't know one road on how to get there. So if you make a wrong turn, you have to think so fast on your feet within a millisecond of what is your next decision, because you got someone behind you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do some really impressive driving during that day run where you go into that parking lot where there's no way out. A second pursuer comes in after you.
Yeah.
But because of the concrete things in the middle of the parking lot, they can't really get over them. So you kind of get two on one side of the dividers and then squirt out. It was impressive. Oh,
and even Michelle Rodriguez, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it by now. I mean, she's just like, man, he is just like calm.
Yeah, she said exact words, cool as a cucumber behind that wheel. and that's exactly what I'm saying. You know, the Taurus is an underdog of the chassis. And not to sound big-headed, but I said it in the show. I am confident 100% that there is nobody in the world that can drive that car better than me. I've been racing Taurus SHOs for 12 years, whether or not it's drag racing. I used to autocross. I've road raced. I've done everything with them. So, you know, that car, when I got caught in that situation where I'm in this parking lot and I have literally one person behind me and one person right in front of me getting ready to sandwich me, block me in, I knew exactly what I had to do to the car to get the car to move and evade around him. To describe what happened was it was raining. Like we had discussed this first episode, it's pouring rains. Everything's drenched. The concrete's slick. But when I built this car, we put what they call a Quaife differential in it. So it is an automatic torque biasing differential for the front end. The differential is amazing at making a car hook up. Well, I'm making this U-turn around this light pole. So I got one guy behind me and then I got one guy in front of me. And as I'm making this U-turn, I make sure that I go really far wide so that I can get this pursuer to get off, you know, off into the edge. And right as he got right up to me where he's getting ready to touch me, I pumped the brakes a little bit, threw all the weight of the car on the nose to where the nose had enough grip to make the differential swing out and basically just drive right around them. And it made it look easy. It made it look like I just simply drove around them. But you put any other car, any other driver in that kind of environment, and that would have been a collision.
It would have been a panic. Just hit the gas, hit the brake. Not thinking. Yeah. I hear everything that you said.
Demolition derby, you know?
And as somebody who's driven a lot of these cars, I will be the first one to step up and say a lot of people underestimate just how good that Gen 1, Gen 2 platform was underneath those cars.
Yeah.
When I would track my 89, I had an 89 with just some suspension mods. It was ridiculously tossable. I know a guy with a 92 that had he didn't really do anything to the engine, but he had the Quaife. He had some good suspension mods. He did a track day over at a track in Southwest Michigan. And he had like a couple Porsche guys pissed at him. Oh, yeah. It was a special event. And I mean, he paid decent money to be there, but they were pissed because he was running right with these Porsche guys. Yeah. And he was just like, yeah, I mean, these guys were just, they couldn't believe that I was hanging with him. And it's like, it's an underestimated platform, but you definitely know it. I've got another quick question here. You said that everybody went into the track blind. They didn't really know, anything that was going to go on there. Were you at least told ahead of time that this was going to be like a mixed surface thing, or was it just build a car and show up? Because so many people showed up with like really high power cars with like just barely legal slicks basically. And it's just like, that's the worst tire for this kind of situation.
So there was a little bit of preparation into this. Cause when we were casting, they basically told everybody that look, we want to find somebody who can outrun pursuers. You know, they didn't want to tell you anything else. After you were casted as a personality, mm-hmm. they showed us some drone footage of an environment that they said was going to be the place. Of course, it did not end up being the place.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they pulled something over your head. They showed some drone footage, and in this drone footage of the place that they had showed, it was mixed surface. I remember being at work, and I'm on this Zoom call, and they're playing the drone footage on the Zoom call, and I have a notepad next to me, and I'm writing down every little thing that I could think about of what it is, where am I racing, right? Mm-hmm. And parts of this, there was mixed surface. There was gravel, but there was also noticeably some concrete and gravel straightaways, mm-hmm. some decently long straightaways where I was like, all right, obviously that's where all the fast cars are going to go because they're going to try to put distance on them. Mm-hmm. Come to find out, that wasn't even the place we were racing at. So, but yeah, we knew. So people knew that they needed to show up with a car that, as long as they were paying attention, they should have known the car that they needed to bring needed a turn, needed to be on multiple surfaces. I'll be the first to say my car was entirely too low for the type of racing at that kind of compound because I knew it was going to be mixed surface. I didn't know there was going to be jumps. I didn't know there was going to be craters that you could literally bottom your car out at. I mean, that car got bottomed out so much. There's actually a point on the night run on episode one where I knew where there was a jump and I was trying to avoid it the entire time, but I had someone behind me and I had so much momentum going around a corner that I was like, I can't not hit the jump because if I do, I'm going to lose all my momentum and these guys are going to get ground on me. So I just hit the jump anyway, and I hit the jump with that car and sparks go out everywhere out of the bottom of it. And they were like, oh, he hit the jump.
Now, just to make sure everybody is aware, if you haven't seen Getaway Driver, you can see it on Discovery. You can get it on their streaming.
And Discovery Plus.
Yeah, Discovery Plus. And Zach, you won. I mean, you're the season one champion. You won more than anybody else on the program. You won. Well, the first episode you were in, there's the day run and then there's the night run. And you won both of those. And you're invited to come back for the next episode to try to win another night run. So you came back for the second one, you won that one, and then you came back for the third one. Yeah. I mean, tell us a little bit about that last run, because as they were saying on the program, that's like, I mean, he's done this a bunch of times. He kind of knows the course now. That's got to be a huge advantage.
So going into the third night run, for one, I was already shocked that I had really made it three rounds. I mean, I was surprised, but I wasn't not surprised in a way, if that kind of makes sense. Like, I was really confident in my abilities. And after being out there one time, especially with that car, you know, I was confident enough. So I wasn't really surprised that I made it, but I was also surprised that, you know, like, holy shit, we're doing this. Like, we're actually doing it. But so to talk about like what happened on the third night run, I knew, I was like, these guys know how I drive. So the best way to avoid these guys is to make sure they just don't even know where I am. Mm-hmm. So I went into a whole entire different tactic on this third night run, and I went in completely lights off everything. So I turned off headlights, taillights. If there was a light bulb in the car, I took it out. I go into this compound, and the editing doesn't really show it a lot, but they had not a clue where I was for a solid minute and a half to 2 minutes. I made my way to the back of this compound, swept the entire backside of the compound where there was a potential three exits, and I never saw a pursuer. Well, I did see one. I did see a pursuer. I saw his lights, but I made sure I went away where he did not know where I was going to be. After I eliminated basically half of the compound, I made my way to the other side of the compound where I had already eliminated the other two potential exits. So I knew exactly where this exit was at this point, because there was only six potential exits that I could really find on Google Maps. Because that's basically how I did this, was like after, especially after being in there one time, you know, I'm sitting in the hotel, you know, the day after the time, and I'm looking at Google Maps and I'm like, all right, they said there is six potential exits and they were going to change all the time. And I'm like, so this is an exit, this is an exit, this is an exit. I marked them down and I,
that's awesome.
I was educated with it, you know, I planned this shit out.
Google Maps. Oh, that's epic, man. And yeah. I mean, it shows, because I mean, nobody else did what you did, and you almost got away on that third night, dude. You were so close, man.
So yeah, like I said, I knew where that exit was. I was going to it, and sure enough, the minute I pull into this, basically the corner before the rail, or I'm pulling into this place where it's on the way to that the exit, and the one pursuer was literally blocking the one way to get to that exit. So obviously, they were not trying to let me get out. They knew where the exit was. So, and they need some they need good TV, you know? Right. So let's block the exit first and then see if he can still do it.
Wait for him to come to us.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly what happened. So I knew I had to lure him out. So I literally drove straight towards him. I'm like playing chicken with him. And you can see it kind of in the photo. If you're watching YouTube right now, you can kind of see it in the photo. I have a 40,000 lumen light bar.
I was about to bring that up. You have a huge light bar mounted on the core support for the radiator.
Yeah. So the light bar got put there on the episode 2, because in episode 1, I put my car through a chain link fence and tore off the headlights. So I was like, I went and put that on, went and bought like a $600 light bar from some truck shop. And, but anyway, so I'm driving straight towards the pursuer, and right when I get like 30 feet from him, I flip that light bar on.
And, I mean, that was awesome.
So, I mean, I could literally see his eyeballs in his helmet through the window. I mean, that's how bright this light bar is. And, right as I flip it on, I make a U-turn, right? And I'm like, all right, sweet. He's chasing me. So I lured him off that exit. Well, the part of the road that I'm in is in a, kind of like a, it's muddy, it's tall grass or whatever. And he's following me, and I tried to move from second gear to first gear, cause I was getting ready to go through some really hairy terrain. And I was going to have to probably lose a front bumper to go through the area that I was going to go. And right as I went to go grab the shifter broke. Mm. And I literally got stuck in neutral for probably 5 or 6 seconds. Well, that is a lot of time when you're getting chased by three pursuers. The one pursuer who I had, lured out, he hit me in the back bumper. Well, right after he hit me in the back bumper to give me a real hard push, I was able to get it into back into second gear. Right as I got it into second gear, he was already in my quarter panel, pushing me sideways, and then all three pursuers, I'm talking one in the back quarter panel, one hit me in the door, and then the third one, the final third one came and smacked the driver wheel, which you can see in the picture. If you're watching on YouTube, you can look at that driver wheel, and you can see that thing has got about 39,000 degrees of camber. when he hit me, that thing hit so hard, it bent the coil over and then snapped the axle. So once it snapped the axle, it was done. There was nothing I could do. So it was free game for all three of those pursuers to get their payback on me for making them look silly
and they did. They did. But, man, epic performance as a Toro Show fan. I mean, I was stoked to see it. I'm stoked to see everything that you're doing. We've been. Is there going to be a second season of Getaway Driver? Do you know?
So there is a second season that they are already casting for. everyone's been asking me, am I doing season two? Am I doing season two? And even if I was going to be doing season two and I knew I was doing season two, I wouldn't even be able to tell you if I could.
Yeah, but I know. Think
you're the Stig of the Getaway Driver now.
Yeah, you know, I will say I would love to come back. You know, it would be cool. And it would be so cool to come back, especially if it was something like I was a pursuit driver, mm-hmm. or, you know, I don't even have to necessarily be competing for money. Just
give you a classic RoboCop Taurus.
Yeah, I mean
that would be good. Yeah,
give me a couple $1,000, I'll build a Taurus, and I will destroy everybody taking out run.
Are you listening, Discovery? Give Zach a classic RoboCop Taurus with the light bars, everything.
Yep. Oh yeah,
that's fantastic. Your money right there.
Yeah, I will get you that audience. I promise you.
Well, I want to talk about something else. Just really, well, Bruce, I'm interrupting you here. I'm kind of fanboying out here. Why don't you go ahead?
So I got two things. Two things, real quick. So I'm going to ask you both. You can kind of answer them. So first off, I got to come clean. Before Smith and I started working together, became friends, I knew about the show. I knew it existed, but I never really paid much attention to it. I didn't think it was that special. And then between him and our other boss, John Neff, and then you, and it's just, I'm starting to get it more and more. What got you into them? But wait, real quick. But then also, I want to transition into your other show, The Blue Turd, because I really want to show that thing off as well. So let's go from there.
You know, I got into Taurus SHOs mainly because of my father. When I was young, I remember growing up, and I'm probably at the time 10 years old, right? Mm-hmm. And I was so used to doing street racing and stuff like that with my dad. You know, when I say street racing, I don't mean like off a flashlight. I'm like, we pulled up next to a Camaro and we're going to hit it at this red light type street racing. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting in the passenger seat as I'm like 10 years old, and I didn't really think much of the Taurus either. I'm 10 years old. I thought it was just his car, you know? And pulls up next to us is a Camaro SS, like a catfish Camaro. Mm-hmm. And it is loud V8. I mean, you hear the thing thumping on the windows type loud. Mm-hmm. And my dad's like, we're going to race him. Like he said, he's going to race. And I'm like, you know, 10 years old, me, I'm like, dad, that's a race car. like, what are you doing? And then I remember my dad driving away from a catfish Camaro, an LS1 Camaro, mm-hmm. like driving away in the Ford Taurus. And so that stuck with me. That stuck with me. And so naturally, when I became 16 years old and it came time to buy my own car, I had no money and I wanted the fastest thing I could buy for no money.
We've all
How many of us did that?
That
was everybody. And so if you're watching YouTube, what you can see right there on your screen is the Blue Turd. The Blue Turd is a 1995 Ford Taurus SHO that I bought when I was 16 years old for $950.
That's your first car we're looking at right there.
That is my first car.
That is your first car.
What is that, 13 years.
Huh.
That's awesome.
I did not know that part of the story. That's super cool.
I think it's just amazeballs that – one, you still have your first car. I would love to get my first car back. It was an 82 LTD Crown Victoria. Nobody cares about those cars. I can't even find like one similar. That's how bad.
No, you won't. And that was one thing that like it kind of stuck with me because, you know, being a young car enthusiast, you know, back in the day we played on forums and stuff like that. All you ever heard was the old people saying about how they, you know, they wish they had their first car. They wish they had their first car. And I remembered everybody always talking about it. Like, why does everybody just want their first car? Well, obviously I don't need to get rid of my first car. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I had that Crossroads. I mean, I remember being 17 years old, sitting in science class on the on my fucking computer. I'm on my computer in science class and I'm listing the car on Craigslist because I'm like, you know, I'm gonna get something else, you know, and I quickly changed my mind and I'm really glad I did. You know, this car has led me quite a life. I mean, I think this car has taken me places that a lot of people will say it's an amazing story. And, you know,
it's an amazing story. You don't have to say a lot. It is an amazing story.
To humble myself, I really have to sit back and look at the accomplishments and look at the stuff I've been able to do. I mean, how many people can say that they've been on, you know, two network televisions?
That's true, because you were also on Netflix Fastest Car.
Correct. You know,
is that how they found you for Getaway Driver? Or
I have no clue, man. So here's even the crazy part. People think that like I'm out here just applying to be on TV shows, and in fact it's the exact opposite. I've never applied for a television show ever.
I'll say this much for Discovery, at least, because I have a little bit of experience with them with a previous life doing wood chipper stuff. I mean, I give them credit for just scouring the world, scouring the internet, looking for interesting stories, amazing personalities. I mean, you've got both easily. So, I mean, everything that you're getting right now, everything that you're able to do, well-deserved. And to make that live for people, I mean, Zach, your story with your first car, your Ford Taurus, that now runs 8.96 in the quarter mile.
Yep.
This was a car you bought for $950. It's a front wheel drive car. It's a front wheel drive Taurus, yep, the fastest in the world.
Stick shift.
You are still, that's another thing. You are still shifting five gears in that car. You've got it down to four.
Believe this or not, it was a five-speed transmission, but I ran 170 mile an hour with a 24.5-inch tall tire in fourth gear. I spin a V6, 9,300 RPM.
I love it. I guess you're right. Now that I think about it, the videos, you're only going into fourth. Wow. Yep. Okay. That's even more impressive. Yep. Shifting the gears manually, and that was still basically the Taurus transmission. It's got upgraded gears, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's got an upgraded gear set. And what I tell people is, like, you know, people say factory transmission. What I like to call it is an upgraded transmission. But when you talk about drag racing world, that's a stock transmission.
Yeah.
When you talk about drag racing, you have dog engagement transmissions, which you can shift that transmission in between gears with 100 milliseconds.
Yep.
I have years of data. It takes me 270 to 300 milliseconds to shift that. You know, because it is a synchronized transmission, just like a factory style transmission. So, I mean, you have to clutch the car in. You have to shift the gear, unclutch the car, back on the gas. It is not a fast transmission. You know, which leads me to the next evolution of the car. I mean, that the car did amazing for what it was. I mean, is it still a factory Taurus motor? It's a factory Taurus crankshaft. It's still factory cylinder heads. I mean, the car, as far as factory stuff, it was incredibly simple. The next evolution of the Blue Turd is definitely not simple.
Yeah, because you ran, and we did an article, and Bruce, I think you have that article up on YouTube right now,
if you're watching on YouTube, that's the story we're looking at right now.
We did an article, it was about a year ago,
a year and a half ago.
Because Zach, I mean, I follow you on social, and being a show guy, I mean, once I saw this, it was like, we have to cover this.
It's huge.
And 1320 video did an amazing video. I wish we could share it here. YouTube's algorithm would probably knock us down. But 1320 video's story on you making your run, everything that you went through to try to get an 8-second run, you were at a special event. You had some mechanical difficulties there. You ran out of time. Had
every difficulty.
And then COVID was shutting things down, and you got into a private track rental, and you were just busting your ass. And then the last run you do, you finally get 8.967 at 170.69 miles per hour. We're looking at the time slip on YouTube. Mm-hmm. In a front wheel drive Taurus SHO, shifting gears manually, that you bought as your first car at age 16 for $950. That is a damn Hollywood blockbuster movie. I want to see it. I want to see it. I mean, this, I mean, can you tell us a little bit about just the emotional ride that you went through to make that happen? Because another thing that we should mention, you made this run. You had a fiberglass hood on there. The hood was coming up like halfway down the track. You so
know, I'm a very stubborn guy. If it's not noticeable, okay, you can tell me the sky is blue a million times, but if I don't believe you, I'm gonna tell you it's red. Okay, mm-hmm. And for years, you know, I grew up watching drag racing, front wheel drive drag racing. I don't know why it always entertained me. I say it's a lot to do with because I owned a front wheel drive car. I just naturally watched all the Hondas and stuff do it.
It's different. It's different. It's the same reason I got into it. It's different.
Yeah, it's just it's you different, know? And it's a challenge. It's a big challenge, and I like
it. It's much more of a challenge.
The whole quest for eights thing. This started when it was obviously just the quest for nines, right? And I simply did a turbo kit, blah blah blah, and you know, I'm upgrading smaller things here and there. And, you know, I remember I went nines, and the same day that I broke into nines, we ended up going 9.6 on the same day having issues. I'm like, the car was breaking up and having all kinds of issues, and it still went 9.6. And that's when it kind of hit me. I was like, man, if I get this thing ironed out, like screw quest for nines. Like, yeah, it was hard to go nines, but this is an 8-second.
This concept. Is eight.
This is an 8-second combo. So then it started. I was like, okay, it's time to get serious. And I put everything into running an eight. It was a very exciting year for my life because we did the quest for nines and the quest for eights all in 1 year.
That was all in 2020.
All in 2020. But we got to TX2K where I was like, you know, we're going in competition. I'm going to run an eight. And I went there prepared to literally throw the moon at it. I was just like, you know, unplug the wastegate, like 50 pounds of boost. What? I don't care. But when I never got to that point. The car, you start making a lot more power and things start rearing their heads. And that's exactly what was happening. We had electronic issues. We broke axles. We clutch issues. You name it. I broke a shift fork. There was all kinds of weird stuff. And we got eliminated out of TX2K and private track rental the very next day. I had to replace the transmission, literally the second pass of the private track rental. So like I swapped a transmission, I think in an hour and a half, which
sounds insane.
Well,
you're doing this. I mean, you don't have,
I'm doing this alone. Like I don't have a crew of people. I don't have a bunch of people on the payroll. I'm not a shop. I'm not like, it is me. It's me and my wife and, you know, a couple friends who come and help me every now and again. So let's not, this is totally grassroots here. And, you know, I'm swapping transmissions. And when I have to swap a transmission, it's not like the Hondas where like you just unbolt it and you pull it out like in 45 seconds. Like I have to pull my entire engine out. Mm-hmm. Like I can't just pull the transmission off and slide it out. Like I have to pull the whole engine and transmission just to do the transmission.
Yep.
I did that all in an hour and a half. But literally, like, I just got done throwing fluids in the car, roll up into the staging lanes, and we busted off a 9.0 at 168, like right after swapping transmissions. And that's when I was like, oh,
this is happening.
This is happening. And then, you know, the last pass of the night, we got 15 minutes before the gates close. The car leaves. First gear was great. Second gear, great. Third gear, the boost starts rolling in. We're talking 37 pounds of boost and it was about 9,200 RPM, I think is what we revved it out to. And right when I clicked into fourth gear, this is about the eighth mile. And at the eighth mile, we are doing 130 mile an hour. One of the hood pins decides it's going to unlatch itself.
Too fast for me.
Yeah.
Hood pins, this is like, a Taurus.
Nah, I
didn't sign up for this.
Nah, fam, I'm done. I'm out. And, you know, I'm sitting in the driver's seat and I'm just like, no, I'm getting this eight. I don't care. The hood can come off. It can smash my window. I'm driving through this thing.
I love that part of the video. I wish it's a little not safe for work, but it is so appropriate because you're just like, I ain't lifted. I'll buy another hood. Yeah, I'll buy another hood.
Screw that hood. And I mean, exactly what happened, man. Right when we hit 170 mile an hour, right going through the traps, that hood decided to eject itself. And that thing went higher than the scoreboards. I mean, that thing took flight. It went into space. The track officials told me that it, when it landed, it dug itself into the ground like a skewer. And it, and on the hood still, it's got like 3 feet of mud on it where it was stuck into the ground.
You're not going to wash it, are you?
No, it's getting hung up. No. It's just hung up in the garage.
No,
it's,
no.
It's
frame it. Let's get it into the Smithsonian. Yeah. I mean, oh, that's, I mean, such a killer story. And you're not done. Is there anything more that you can tell us about the blue turd that's coming?
So last year, I went to a big race called Bradenton. It was a reunion race. It was kind of like the first race after all the COVID shutdowns. Mm-hmm. And this was at a point where I was like, you know, I've already gone eights. I want to be competitive. I want to race against these Hondas that rule the class. I mean, when you talk about front-wheel drive drag racing, the class is called Extreme Front-Wheel Drive. It is just entirely ruled by Hondas. And, you know, so being me, the against the grain type guy, I'm just like, you know, I want to start messing with them. I want to start ruining their weekends. And so I'm just like, let's go to this race and let's really start pushing things. At this particular event, the motor is over 2 years old. It's never been refreshed. I'm talking same rings and everything. So it's tired. But at this race, we ended up running as much as 48 pounds of boost.
Oh, my God. Oh, show V6, I love you.
Yeah, 48 pounds of boost on an SHO V6 stock crankshaft aluminum rod. Unfortunately, I was not able to have a full clean run that entire weekend. I did get a personal best eighth mile. If I remember correctly, that car ended up going like 5.8 at 138, I think it was, 138 mile an hour and eighth. We went 130 mile an hour to the eighth when we went 8.9. So the car was on a lick.
You were on a way to probably a mid eight, I would say.
Yeah, it was probably going to go a 60 or a 70 pretty easily. But, you know, getting back from that race, I was kind of discouraged because I was like, this combo is not going to do it. You know, I knew I was at limits of the factory block because it had a 2-bolt main and I was constantly having oil pressure issues. Whether that was associated with the blow by because the motor was tired, you know, I don't know, but I know the block itself was showing that it was, I mean, we're making like 900 to 1,000 foot pounds of torque. I mean, come on, it's not made for that.
that's just to hear that from a Taurus. Yeah. I love it.
And, I was like, yeah, it's time for a change. And I was like, if I had an unlimited budget, you know, what would the blue turd look like? And basically I decided to pretend like there wasn't a budget. I just don't know if I regret that yet. But if you guys follow my social media on Instagram, it's Blue Turd Taurus. If you follow me, you kind of know what's coming. I've been designing a billet SHO block for the better yet of 2 years.
Wow.
The block is done. It is a physical product. This was designed in Australia by Bullet Race Engineering. They do all the Billet 2JZs. They do all the Billet RBs, the Billet K series. They're very, probably the best people in the world to design billet blocks. This block is rated for what he is saying, 3000 horsepower. It uses a full bed girdle, you know, like, basically, if you guys know like a GTR motor where there is no main caps, the entire bed plate bolts down to the block. So there's literally no way a crankshaft or the block can move. It doesn't run any water. It is a solid aluminum block, so we're not going to run any water in this at all. Talking about the transmissions that had upgraded gear sets, Chris, you probably know that there's only 10 of those in the world. I owned two of them. And I sold both of them. Those I do not own anymore. That was it was a hard hurdle to sell something off that you were so dependent on. But I was confident enough at the time where I was like, I'm I'm converting this to a K-Series Honda transmission. And that way I can run a Honda K-Series transmission that is a dog box engagement that has tons of aftermarket support with tons of different gear ratios. And we're going to attach that to a billet SHO block. And we're going to put the nastiest turbo that is class legal on this thing. And what? We're not done there. Now we're going to take the chassis. We're going to strip it completely down. I'm going to trailer this thing 14 hours to Long Island, New York, to the best front-wheel drive chassis builder in the world. We're talking the same chassis builder who built the current front-wheel drive world record-holding car, which is held by Speed Factory. They went 747 at 215 mile an hour. That car is currently in his hands in New York, where we are cutting a crap ton of weight. We've cut probably about 250 pounds off the car. And before it was already 2550 with me in it. So it was already incredibly light. And basically we are going to create the ultimate version of a Taurus that can seriously just really ruin a Honda's day, because the Taurus chassis wise math, like on paper, it is 1,000 times better than a Honda. A Honda has a very short wheelbase. Mm-hmm. So even though they have this nice weight ballast where they run like 2,000 pounds of weight on the front nose, because they have no wheelbase, it's super unstable.
Yep.
Getting those cars to hook up mid track is a task.
It's dicey.
It's real dicey. A lot of people wreck on the big end of the track too, because you got these cars moving 180 to 200 mile an hour in the quarter. And slowing down a car that's front wheel drive when you have, 1,800 to 2,000 pounds on the front of it, it's wanting to do a front flip when the minute you start or slow down. But yeah, basically where we are with the car. When the car comes back, hopefully it'll be a billet block, a billet dog box engagement transmission, a lot lighter of a car. And also, it'll be capable to go all-wheel drive.
Oh.
Huh. So something cool about the Honda transmission is that it's a K-Series, which have factory all-wheel drive stuff, which all-wheel drive Honda stuff for drag racing is blowing up right now. So they make billet transfer cases. They make billet transfer gears, all this kinds of stuff. And we did set the chassis up to where it clears the drive shaft. It clears a viscous coupler. It clears everything. So,
oh man,
a couple years from now when I'm like, hey, the front wheel drive drag racing is not doing it for me anymore. I went sevens in the quarter, because that's what the goal is. We're going to go for the quest for sevens front wheel drive. When that is over, we'll slap some big tires on the back, go all-wheel drive, and go hit up some no-prep events,
All right, man.
Zach, you're making me feel so insignificant for holding on to my little 89 Taurus show tipped valve that I tipped like 20 years ago. I was so proud. Look at me. I tipped a valve because I was too cheap to buy an actual adapter for an 80-millimeter mass airflow sensor. I bought some plastic dryer parts and bolted it all together, and then racing a Mustang, the plastic stripped and bolts got sucked into the intake, and I was like, oh, I tipped a valve, and you're building something amazing.
Mass airflow sensors, I don't even use those no more. No.
Yeah, Matt, what are those? That was a big deal back in the day. You go get go get an 80-millimeter mass air from a Lincoln Mark 8. I got one on the red. There you go. See, don't go to Home Depot and buy like plastic dryer parts for an adapter.
Spend a little bit
and buy a good one. Zach, man, I wish we could like spend another week.
Yeah, guys, I got to play moderator here because we want to talk about Tundra and we at least want to read one comment. Yeah. So
yeah,
has to come to an end.
Well, before we do that though, Zach, let everybody know where they can follow you at, and we'll put this in the article that we put up
back at the end. So I recently have a YouTube channel where I do submit, I do upload vlogs every couple weeks. You can look at Blue Turd on YouTube, on Instagram, Blue Turd Taurus, and then you can find me on Facebook at The Blue Turd.
And you've got merch too. I just bought a shirt that's hopefully be here in a week or two.
Yep. Blue Turd. I can't wait. Yeah, blueturd.shop. I'm actually wearing one of the new t-shirts right now.
There you go.
Yeah, one second.
The merch looks cool. I had to go ahead and buy a t-shirt because you've got the blue turd and then you've got the red turd, season one champion.
This one was cool because I put building the impossible right there on the shirt because, I mean, that's what I'm here to do is I want to do whatever you told me was impossible. And it's kind of how the whole movement is I want everybody to realize that, hey, you can chase your dreams. Don't ignore anybody who says it's silly or it can't be done. If you're passionate about something, do the impossible.
Hell yeah. And nobody else. I mean, you're not going to part stores and buying show parts. You're blazing the trail. The folks, email us at podcast@motorone.com. Tell us how much you want to see Zach back here. Because we're probably going to invite him back really soon anyways. But yeah, podcast@motorone.com. Send us your comments. Send us your photos. We do have a little bit that we're going to touch on today. Bruce, do you want to lead us into that here?
I can do that. Yeah. So I think just because we want to talk about Tundra, we only have time for one. Is there one that really struck you? I kind of like the CRZ comments.
With everything, Zach, that you were saying about Hondas, I mean, yeah, let's take a look at CRZ. Bruce, if you have that handy to read, I think I have some photos that I can share up for people because
that'd be perfect, dude.
Because this person, as we've been saying, send us photos, tell us about your project cars, tell us about what you're happy about, what's making you excited. And we got these pictures of a Honda CRZ that we were talking about last week with our cheap hatchback challenge. So Bruce, why don't you read that and I'll get some photos going here.
Sounds good, man. So this comes from Harf of Jar. I assume that's how he wants it pronounced, who commented on YouTube, but then also sent us an email with some pictures. So I'm going to kind of read both here. So he said, yes, the Honda CRZ is such an awesome little car. We've had one for 6 months and it's brilliant. I will email you some photos of my build from stock to lately modified. And he did just that. He has a 2013 Honda CRZ. It has a Honda GE8 intake manifold. Apparently, that's a popular mod, according to him. That gets you about 6 horsepower, Eibach lowering springs, 17-inch rims from a company called Fond Metal, who refurbed them in gold and had from someone who had refurbed them in gold and had put them on an EP3 Civic Type R. He's got a Remus rear diffuser, custom stainless steel rear section of the exhaust with no back box, red Honda badges to make it look Type R-y. He's got JDM yellow fog lights with high beam bulbs. And
I dig that too. I mean, we're looking at all of these on YouTube.
At 4 LED rally style spotlights, what he calls Knight Rider lights, which you can see, and vivid purple calipers. And he did send us some information about this. Apparently, so his family runs a small restaurant, and for doing deliveries, I had previously used a 1995 Mitsubishi Pajero JDM import with a ladder on it, light bars, which was a kind of go anywhere vehicle. And he found this cheap CRZ, and he's kind of been building it up, and that's cool as hell.
I think it's awesome because I've never seen, I mean, I'm not following the CRZ community really close, but I mean, I see Civics all the time. I don't see anybody doing anything really with the CRZ. And I always thought it was just a neat idea for a fun, light, tossable, just little fun car to drive.
One of the very, very, very few hybrid vehicles out there you could get with the manual gearbox.
Manual transmission, yeah.
See, I think that's what killed it. I think the CRZ had incredible potential because that was a replacement for the CRX, if I remember correctly. Yep. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Sort
of, yeah, it came later, but yeah.
But I think the CRZ had a lot of potential. I think the hybrid part kind of pushed it away from a lot of the car community, and that's why you don't see a lot of them. Because if for say you were to take the K series out of a lot of those Hondas, and you would have put a K series or one of the new Turbo K series, for example, in one of the CRZs, I think it'd be a lot more popular.
But here's the thing, Zach. These things are now cheap. We were looking at them last week. You can get they are
super cheap,
$500 all day long. So if you wanted to buy something as a project car that you wanted to drop a K series in,
now that is a bargain.
Much of an initial investment.
Yeah, I mean, for $6,500 for something like that, that's an incredible bargain. Even to leave it by itself, I don't even know if it'd be worth swapping at that point.
I want to know more about the Captain America shield in the back. I need that for my Mazda.
I missed that picture. Wait, show me that picture.
It should be up there right now.
No, I'm looking at the front of it.
Yeah.
You're looking at the front of it?
Yeah, I see the front of it.
All right. Let me see if I can...
Tech support.
Yep, tech support. What do we got going on here? Apparently, when I share a screen, it won't let me share the... Because I'm cycling through the photos like crazy.
Yeah, I'm only seeing the front, dude.
Yeah, we've only seen one.
Well, I tell you what, then. Let's try it. Oh, I see what's going on. Oh, Bill Gates, I hate you sometimes. Bill Gates, you are the bane of my existence. Okay, we're going to share this right now, and we're going to do this the right way. Where hopefully you'll see some of the other photos that I thought were going up. And
now,
there we go.
Still got blacks. There we go. Super America. Yeah, Captain America.
I like that.
The Captain America shield in the back.
We're swapping through photos.
I was on the wrong screen. Chris is just Smith is just the tech nerd here. By that I mean I am not a tech nerd. These CRZ photos. It's just a good looking car. It's got that low stance. I love the fog lights up front. Well done. Let me zip back up here where we could see them. I'm a rally guy at heart, right? I'm a rally guy at heart.
As a fun little vehicle to get around, he said he had a JDM Pajero, which is also a cool vehicle, but as like, it sounds like a delivery vehicle for his family restaurant. That's cool as hell. I got no beef.
Yeah, no. Hey, thanks for sending that in. Thanks for sharing. Anybody else? You know what? Eventually we'll get enough where we're just going to put a whole episode together of people's cars.
I would love that.
And take a look at that. Zach, we would need you there for that just because, I mean, come on. The blue turd, the red turd.
Photos in the world.
So, guys, we got about 15 minutes left. So, we're going to have to hit Tundra pretty quick.
We've got to talk about Tundra. And, Zach, thanks for joining us on Tundra. Yeah, it's not every day when Toyota launches an all new truck. And this isn't just a facelifted truck. I mean, this
all new generation, all new platform. All new generation underneath.
Platform underneath. The 2022 Toyota Tundra is here. Bruce, you have some photos up there. I've got a little bit of information to share with people.
Yep, I can start cycling some photos now. They sent us over 100.
Yeah, you better handle the photos this time around.
No, I got it. But the person who wrote this story and our buddy Brett Evans, they did not send a single image of the double cab body. We have only seen the Crew Max body on this thing, which we're both kind of bummed about because with the double cab, and I'll get to this in a second, you can get the longer bed on it. Which seems like for a lot of people is going to be might what they want, but Toyota doesn't want it to see it yet. So,
well, you know, it's a good question because a lot of people, they want the full cab, right? They don't want the smaller cab.
I think trucks have taken a completely different turn in the past 10 years. You know, trucks 10 years ago, it was all about the usability of it. It was how, you know, the long bed and stuff like that. Trucks nowadays are just they're part of the regular fleet. I mean, people, these are no longer trucks anymore. These are full blown luxury vehicles that can be driven anywhere and supposed to do everything. I think the crew cab version is probably what they're going to sell the most of. And in my opinion, I think it looks probably better than what I could imagine a double cab version is.
You're right. But my only thing is, and this is coming as the auto journalist part of me, if you're going to debut two different body styles, show us both body styles.
Comes from me as a writer. Both of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Toyota tells us, I mean, you can get their double cab with the 8-foot bed.
Yep.
I dig the eight foot beds. So I want to see that, you know,
those taillights are hideous.
Oh, wait, taillights. Did you see the front?
I mean, okay, look, get me wrong. The front is not terrible. It's not the best in my book. Like, for me, I think the grill is a little long on the front, but hey, you know, with some paint work, you can make that look pretty tough. What's happening there?
The front is the grill. It's the entire front. You can't call it a front anymore. It's just the grill on the Tundra truck.
All right, let's hit some specs super quick here.
Let's hit some stats here. So, So no more V8 for the Tundra.
No more V8. Base engine is a twin turbo 3.5 liter V6, making 389 horsepower, 479 pound feet of torque.
Yep.
You can upgrade to a hybrid version of that same engine that gets you 437 horsepower, 583 pound feet of torque. So,
and that's right there with all the half ton competition, with the higher end half ton competition. We got to give Toyota credit there.
Yes and no. The problem is, and again, this is the auto journalist part of me. Toyota told us what the non-hybrid V6 would make. That will tow up to 12,000 pounds.
But they haven't told us
what the hybrid will tow. And an F-150 Power Boost will do 12,700 pounds. So 700 pounds more than the turbo version. A Ram 1500 V8 with their e-torque, which is their mild hybrid setup, will do 12,750 pounds. So that hybrid better help a lot.
So basically what this tells us, I mean, Toyota's trying to figure out how to make sure their Tundra tows 13,000. Because they got a one up, right? I mean, that's pretty much par for the course in the truck world. When it comes to towing, we gotta one up the other guys.
I'm
really curious because you're talking about twin turbo V6s.
Yep.
What kind of miles per gallon is this thing getting?
We don't know. We don't have an official number yet. Presumably, it's gonna be better than that big V8. It was what, a 5.7? Am I crazy?
The old Tundra was the 5.7.
Yeah. So presumably it's going to be better than that usually, but we don't have numbers yet. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not on the EcoBoost kick, man.
Sure.
Wait. Yeah. Massive turbo guy isn't on the EcoBoost?
No. It was great on paper. Don't get me wrong. So an engineer spent a lot of time in a dark room doing mathematics and was like, we need to do this. Yep. And I think... I think comparatively, it's too much work for a small motor. I think the durability or the power, just the overall package of a more efficient V8, I feel works better.
There's a lot of people that agree with you on that, and I've been kind of on the fence on that myself. You are making a smaller engine work harder,
right?
But it's like I've driven EcoBoost Ford trucks, which would be comparable. They're 3.5 liter, they're twin turbo,
totally,
and it literally feels like you are wringing its guts out. If you are trying to pull a good amount of weight, especially if you're trying to pull it uphill or anything like that. I have a diesel. I have an F-350 diesel, because I pull a lot, but sure. I came from that world of gas pulling engines for trucks. I'm real happy with like GM always putting the time and investment into improving their platform. Mm-hmm. As far as the V8 stuff goes, I think it works real good. I think I'd be really curious to see how Toyota works with entering that twin turbo V6 world, especially since Ford has such a grasp on that. I mean, the EcoBoost world has been held by Ford for what, 15 years?
Yeah. Well,
I think the answer is, and if I'm being totally honest, they're not. I think Toyota knows that at this point, after whatever many generations of the Tundra, yeah, and that they had the T100 before that, that they have realized they cannot compete with Ford, Chevy, and Ram.
No.
They can still build a big truck, but they can't do the same thing.
They can build a big truck, they can make it competitive, and they can garner sales. I mean, it's not like nobody's buying these things.
Oh, of course.
But no, you hit the nail on the head. After years and years and years,
decades,
there's that Detroit dominance that, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to be breaking anytime
soon. Toyota hasn't cracked it. Nissan hasn't cracked it. Maybe in the future, your Rivians or something like that, maybe they can
take a chip
out of it. But
I don't even know if Ford has cracked it. Okay. Like, don't get me wrong. The EcoBoost has been an amazing platform as far as a seller for them, mm-hmm, switching to the twin turbo V6 stuff. But I'm a Snap-on Tools dealer. I go to dealerships that deal with these motors all the time. And that is one engine that nobody, I mean, everyone has to work on it, but they'll straight, the technicians will tell you right to their face that these things are crap.
I've heard a lot of horror stories about trying to work on those on the EcoBoost. Enough to where I was thinking about getting one of the more recent Toro shows, twin turbo all wheel drive, and it's just like,
that's why I don't own one.
You know what? No, I think I'll just stay away. Yeah, I think I'll just stay away.
So the problem, okay. So this will answer a lot of questions as far as the new Tundra goes. If Toyota decides that this is going to be a new motor for them, right? This is going to be the cookie cutter motor. This is the new 3.5 twin turbo V6, and they start moving this engine and putting it in other cars that Toyota makes. That's when you will know that this is a problem, because when you start making an engine and you realize it's a good engine or whatever, and then you start, but then you have to change things about this engine to make it fit for all kinds of different platforms. I feel like that's when you start running into issues. And I mean, don't get me wrong. You make a lot of money as a company,
right?
Because you make one engine, you put it in 20 different cars, and all of a sudden your profit margins go through the roof. Which Ford did. They put the EcoBoost in anything. They replaced the Raptor engine, mm-hmm. for Christ's sake, with an EcoBoost, which I don't believe anybody actually wanted that.
Zach, I got bad news for you. I think that's exactly what's going to happen, because in the Land Cruiser, the new Land Cruiser is not going to be coming to the United States. It is already available in the Middle East and Asia.
Okay.
It gets the 3.5 liter twin turbo V6. It doesn't get the hybrid version, but it does get the twin turbo version. And by all accounts from what we're hearing, the next gen Toyota Sequoia SUV is going to get the same engine. So
there, I would be really fearful that the engine is engineered and overly engineered, because it has to fit in so many different types of cars. If they cracked it and they cracked it well, and that engine works very well, and they run 200,000 miles and don't have, heat problems, turbo failures, and all the common stuff that these types of combinations have, then Tundra, Toyota you'll see them start to steal the numbers.
I gotta be honest with you. The comments have kind of been bearing that out. The Land Cruiser specifically debuted with the 3.5 twin turbo, we had commenters saying the same thing, that the 5.7 V8 has its crap on fuel economy, but it runs like a hammer. You can't break them.
So could you imagine, just for say numbers sake, could you imagine what would have happened if Toyota took their $30 million or $1 billion or whatever they spent on engineering a twin turbo V6, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine if they took half that budget and they said, hey, we're going to start with our 5.8 liter. We need to make sure this thing is more powerful, but at least 50% more efficient. Would they not be able to do that?
I like where you're going with that, but I think what automakers run into is most of the buyers that want the V8s just don't give a rip about efficiency.
Well, see,
is what I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of disagree, because you have to look at it as a trade-off. You designed a 3.5 liter twin turbo V6 because you're trying to hit the entire market, right? You're trying to get the soccer mom driving her kids to school, and you're trying to also get the workhorse who's doing concrete construction, 5 days a week. You want to hit both, right? Well, does a 3.5 EcoBoost hit the both parties?
It can,
but
own a construction company, Chris, if you own a construction company and you needed 100 trucks or 500 trucks, are you going to go buy a 3.5 twin turbo new Toyota Tundra? Because
no. I'm gonna hold out and buy a Lightning.
I don't agree with you on that either. But we gotta do more Tundra facts. We gotta tell the people about the Tundra. I agree with this conversation, but quick, sorry.
Good conversation. Like we said, Tundra.
Double cab, crew max body styles. Like I said, Toyota didn't give us images of the double cab, so I can't tell you what it looks like. Crew max, you get with a 5.5 foot bed. Double cab, you get with a 6.5 foot bed or an optional 8.1 foot bed. So good size. inside infotainment system, the base unit is now 8 inches. It used to be 7 inches, and you can upgrade to one that is 14 inches, which is freaking massive.
That's like that's Tesla sized.
I think my first TV when I was a kid was 12 inches. So that's a big screen.
The interior, we have some interior shots here that we've been looking at.
Yeah. Been cycling through stuff.
I mean, I think the interior looks good. I think Toyota is smart to stick with what Ford, Ram and Chevrolet are doing by keeping a lot of features, a lot of controls, a lot of buttons, staying away from sort of the minimalist kind of approach we're seeing with cars. And that's really what they're doing here. You still have a nice big shifter stalk in the middle. I think it's a good looking interior, but you know what? I still think Ram is the segment leader here. I still think Ram is just killed it with their exterior styling, their interior styling. And it's like, when did that happen? When did Ram become the good looking truck?
Man, God, do I so agree with you. I'm not even a Chrysler. I hate everything Chrysler. I really can't stand owning anything Chrysler product. But I will give it to Ram. When I sit in a Ram, one of the newer, nicer trucks, the interior on them is beautiful. And I will say the Tundra, it looks good. It looks really nice.
I just I can't get past the grill. I cannot get past. I mean, this at least now Chevrolet has something to be happy about because they no longer have the ugliest. They no longer have the ugliest truck on the road. I'm sorry, Toyota. This massive grill. It's just not doing it for me. And I know we've had some commenters that have been saying something similar. I've been seeing a lot on social media too. A lot of people, just dropping the barf emojis and other less PC emojis that I won't bring up here. But
everybody's that way when it comes down to something new. I mean, I'm sure. Yeah. I don't even know if Motor One covered it, but compared to like the new Supra. Everyone was talking bad about the new Supra.
We covered it. Don't worry.
I know you guys had Supra. To have covered it.
We talked about it on Rambling About Cars, in fact.
Yeah, wait, you mean the coach built BMW? The BMW that Toyota coach built?
Yes, 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 exactly. This exact car I'm talking about. But, a couple years pass, and cars do this to me. A couple years go by, and you see them a little bit more, and you're like, okay, I'm kind of feeling it now.
But I don't see, I just don't see that happening.
Chris, you have to wait for the other cars to get uglier.
That's right.
There you go.
Last thing, there will be a Tundra TRD Pro at launch. So we're not going to have to wait around for it like you generally do a Raptor or things like that, TRX. So there will be a TRD Pro at launch. It's not that hot. It's not a Raptor competitor. It's not a ZR2 TRX competitor. So you get 2.5-inch internal bypass Fox shocks. You get TRD tuned springs with a 1.1-inch suspension lift. You get a TRD stabilizer bar, front LED light bar. And then also, if you're not going to go full TRD Pro, there'll be a TRD off-road package that gives you Bilstein dampers, crawl control, and multi-terrain select. So, yeah,
everything you could want, everything the truck guy wants.
I guess. I mean, I would think you'd probably buy a Raptor over a TRD Pro, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But the option is there. If by God, if you would need a Tundra, but you need the toughest Tundra there is, that option exists.
Toughest Toyota Tundra you have.
Yeah, that's the one.
Forest fire approved. Yeah.
I would do that over a Raptor, a TRX, or maybe even a ZR2. I don't know, but it exists, and someone will buy it, and that's why it exists.
And these will be available, I think, before the end of the year. And there's no pricing available yet. Right. So I imagine Toyota is still trying to fine tune all of the finer points as you do usually with new vehicles. But yeah, folks, what do you think about the new Toyota Tundra? I suspect it'll be a stout truck. Toyota has a really good history with making strong trucks. But the styling, is it good for you? Is it not good for you? Podcast at motorone.com. Send us an email You know the drill by now. You can also comment on our videos at YouTube, Motor One Podcasts. Yep. You can also comment on the article that will go up this Friday. Yep. You can follow me on Twitter at @CHWriting. Bruce, where are you at?
Chris Bruce 1985. And Zach, we got a minute here. Tell us everywhere we can follow you, everywhere we can find you.
Instagram, Blue Turd Taurus. Facebook, The Blue Turd. You can find me on YouTube, Blue Turd, right on YouTube. You can just type in turd on YouTube. You'll probably find me.
I wouldn't recommend that.
Don't type turd on YouTube, everybody.
Interesting. If you do type in Blue Turd on Google, it is everywhere. It's cool. Great. And I also just launched a brand new website. I do all my shirts, hats, merch, and I'm going to be doing some raffles for some of the parts off of the red car and the blue car that I own.
And what's that website?
www.blueturd.shop, S-H-O-P.
Cool.
We'll dump this info out in the article to let people know. Zach, thank you so much for joining us here.
Yeah, man.
And cool. I mean, it's a pleasure. It's a tremendous pleasure to meet somebody so passionate about cars. And I mean, yeah, you're making the impossible possible.
And so,
that's why I put it on a t-shirt.
And as always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Whenever you happen to be listening to us, we appreciate it. You can always get a hold of us. podcast@motorone.com is the email address. Motor One Podcast is the YouTube link. Motor One is where you'll find the post. So wherever you happen to be looking for us, that's where you'll find us. And good night, and thanks a lot.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Goodbye.